This is ArtBeat, WMUK's weekly look at creativity and the arts in Southwest Michigan. I'm Zinta Astars. If you've heard of John Fetzer, it's probably because he once owned the Detroit Tigers. He was also a pioneer broadcaster with a deep interest in spiritual exploration. In his new book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age, Western Michigan University professor Brian Wilson digs deeper to reveal what few know about Fetzer.
If people know about John Fetzer beyond Michigan, they typically know of him because of his connection to the Detroit Tigers. But I think what really interests people is the title of the book, which is John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Well, what does he have to do with the New Age? And so I get to introduce people to his kind of spiritual search, which lasted a lifetime. Even his closest colleagues in his businesses in baseball didn't know the full extent of. I was allowed to look into the archives at the Fetzer Institute and basically just dig into the details. It's just truly remarkable, all the kinds of metaphysical and spiritual movements that he was interested in, that he read about, and that he practiced.
See, now that's how I know him, but I wonder if that's just me or if that's more typical of Kalamazoo, that I actually knew about that spiritual quest he was on. But it's also probably because I'm not a big sportsman. Should I admit that? Now, New Age sometimes comes with a connotation that I think has changed over time. Mm-hmm. I think originally it was thought as something, you know, where you explore things and you're open-minded. Today, maybe it's a little eccentric?
Well, eccentric, and I think it's now actually a kind of term of abuse to call somebody a New Ager. It seems to signify a kind of shallowness.
Mm.
And there definitely has been a kind of shift in New Age spirituality. I think John Fetzer was a proto-New Ager. He talked about the New Age before the New Age movement was called the New Age movement. And what he meant by it was that he always felt that individual spiritual transformation, which was what he was looking for himself, he felt that that always had to be in service of a global spiritual transformation. And that global spiritual transformation, that's the New Age. And so there was always this kind of sense of community, of service, of it wasn't simply about your inner journey, but how your inner journey fits with other people's to create some kind of global transformation.
Mm.
Unfortunately, as the New Age became kind of commercialized and really focused on kind of the accoutrements, the crystals, the tarot cards, all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
It became hyper-individualistic and in some cases narcissistic.
Mm.
So I think one of the things I've tried to do in the book, especially in the last chapter, is talk about in what way was John Fetzer a New Ager, and that kind of social component, that sense of service that he always had, and to differentiate it from today's New Age. It's interesting because a lot of people we would have called New Agers back in the 80s and 90s reject the term because, again, it connotes a kind of shallowness.
Yeah.
And they prefer just simply to call themselves spiritual.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the biggest growing demographics in the United States are people who identify as spiritual but not religious. And there's even an acronym, SBNR. They do these opinion polls every so often, and they find that a number of people, when asked, what's your religious tradition or what's your religion, they'll say none. And when they drill down on that to ask people, what do you mean by that? What they find is only like 2% really identify themselves as either atheist or agnostic. And the rest talk about themselves as spiritual. And of course, that means all sorts of different things, but a lot of it fits under the kind of New Age spirituality that was popular in the 80s and 90s.
This is ArtBeat on WMUK. I'm Zinta Astars. I asked Wilson about John Fetzer's spiritual roots.
John Fetzer was raised a Christian, and he was baptized a Methodist. And at a certain point, his mother converted to Seventh-day Adventism. And so he followed her into the church. He was very committed to the tradition until his late 20s. This provided him with several opportunities because the first radio station he was really involved in was WEMC, the Radio Lighthouse. He was recruited by Emmanuel Missionary College, which of course today is Andrews University, to set up their radio station. And so he got experience as a radio engineer, as a programmer, as on-air talent. He basically did it all. So this was a wonderful experience for him. But in his late 20s, he grew restive and he left Seventh-day Adventism. At that point, he really wanted to widen his spiritual search. And so what he did is he went down to Indiana to a place called Camp Chesterfield, which is a spiritualist camp. One of the last remaining three big spiritualist camps in the United States today. And there he met mediums and psychics and got very interested in seances and things like that. The other thing is Camp Chesterfield has a bookstore, and they stock the latest in all sorts of metaphysical and spiritual titles. So he said that every time he went down there, he would come back with an armload of books. And so he started studying, and he got into things like theosophy, and he read about traditions like Rosicrucianism and Hermeticism. He also became a Freemason, and that was very influential on him as well. He really widened his search after he left Seventh-day Adventism, but he always looked back with fondness with his time in the church and his time at Emmanuel Missionary College, because that's where he got his start. That's where he met his wife, Rhea. And for him, it was a very good environment to basically get the experience he needed, both in terms of his businesses, but also it really kind of launched him on his spiritual quest.
All right, so let's throw something to our sports fans. I mean, here's this radio man, and here's a spiritual person. How does he get involved with the Detroit Tigers?
Well, it began simply as a business opportunity. He always enjoyed baseball, and the Detroit Tigers were always his team, even growing up. Baseball for him was kind of the ideal community. I mean, it's people working together. It's a team.
Mm. Yeah.
And if it's a good team, then they're functioning not only at a physical level, but at a kind of mental level, maybe almost a psychic level, who knows. In 56, he put together an 11-man syndicate to buy the Detroit Tigers, $5.3 million. But he quickly realized that running a ball team with 11 different owners was not a good idea. So he bought them out. So in the early 60s, he became the sole owner of the Detroit Tigers. He owned the Tigers until he sold it in the 1980s for $53 million. So it was a good business investment.
There's a nice profit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he does actually blend some of that spirituality with his sports life. Didn't he bring transcendental meditation into the locker room?
He did. He usually was very hands-off with his players, and he had a rule that he didn't fraternize with his players because he thought that led to problems. But occasionally he would inject something. And so in the 1970s, he got very interested in transcendental meditation and began practicing TM and became good friends with the Maharishi Yogi and advised him on radio and television. So he offered training in TM to those players who were interested. Of course, he never imposed it, never forced anybody to do it.
Yeah.
But certain players took to it and continued practicing it and found it was useful in improving their game.
I'm Zinta Astars. You've been listening to WMUK's Artbeat, our weekly look at the creative arts. I've been speaking with Brian Wilson, the author of John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Wilson will read from the book at This Is a Bookstore in Kalamazoo on Thursday, September 20 at 7 p.m. Visit WMUK.org to hear more of our conversation. And join us every Friday at this time for Artbeat. Thanks for listening.